This is Day to Day. I'm Alex Chadwick. Muslims from all over the world have begun making their way to Saudi Arabia for the annual pilgrimage, or Hajj, to the holy city of Mecca. Saudi Crown Prince Abdullah today asked pilgrims to focus on their faith and stay out of trouble. The annual pilgrimage offers outsiders a glimpse into the life of Saudi Arabia. Journalist Lawrence Wright got a rare chance to see the country up close last year when he taught American-style journalism to Saudi reporters. Lawrence Wright spoke earlier with Day to Day's Karen Grigsby Bates.
Lawrence Wright, you spent time in Saudi Arabia teaching Saudi journalists the basics of reporting using free press principles, even though that country doesn't have much freedom of the press. How did that happen?
I was trying to get into the kingdom. They wouldn't let me in as a reporter. I spent more than a year trying to get a visa. Then I found that the best way of getting into the kingdom at all was to take a job, and I had the good fortune of finding a job at the Saudi Gazette, and they sponsored me and let me in.
You worked for the Saudi Gazette. Was that different from the other papers?
Yeah. They're actually, the newspaper business in Saudi Arabia is quite good, despite the fact that it's not a very free press, or not free at all. But the most popular paper in the country is OCAS, and they have an English language spinoff, the Saudi Gazette, which is mainly geared at these expat workers from Southeast Asia.
How did the staff of the newspaper look to you compared to, being in the newsroom in the Austin Daily American?
Well, if you were only to look at the equipment, you would say, this is a very standard first world newspaper. Of course, now, when I first walked into that newsroom, it was interesting. You know, there were all the editors were from India. And there was a translation room, and all of the translators were from Sudan. But what was really exotic to me is the fact that there were no women at all visible. And actually, I was supposed to supervise two or three young women reporters, but they were, at least at that day, they were not evident. And after I was there for about a week, I was finally allowed to meet with the women reporters. And so I could only see them once a week, and then otherwise I supervised them by talking on the phone.
And were they veiled, or were you allowed to see their faces?
Well, all Saudi women wear what you call an abaya, which is a black robe, and then they wear hijabs, which are the head coverings. But one of my reporters, Najla, also wore what's called a niqab, which covers her face. We worked together on a number of stories. And yet, after 3 months in the country, I never did see anything other than her gold-rimmed glasses.
In your New Yorker article, you wrote about a March 2002 tragedy that seemed to be pivotal in galvanizing the Saudi press corps. Tell us what it was, and tell us what happened as a result of that.
There was a fire in a girls' school, middle school in Mecca, and there were 15 girls who were trampled to death in the panic, trying to get out of the school. It developed that there were a number of fire trucks and civil defense people who arrived on the scene to rescue the girls, but their way was blocked by a member of the religious police known as the Matawa. And may have been only one Matawa present, but he stopped the entire community, including parents who could see their girls on the other side of the fence. And they were told that the girls could not leave the school because they weren't wearing their abayas. And one of the fathers, begged his daughter to go back and get her abaya, and she burned to death.
So she went into a burning building to retrieve the garment she'd been asked to and didn't come out?
No. This event was so telling to the Saudis themselves because they were getting to ask themselves for the first time publicly, how we treat our women, how we treat our own daughters, and is it more important that they be decent in the Saudi sense, or are we willing to let them die? There was a lot of introspection going on in the press at that point, but about a month after this, the Minister of the Interior called the editors-in-chief in and told them no more stories, so they stopped.
What would have happened had they continued?
I think it's my feeling that, you know, Saudi society doesn't have any, there's no civil society in Saudi Arabia. And there's nothing except the government and the mosque. And this was the first moment where the Saudi press had come free. If that had just been allowed to continue, I think that whole society would gradually be far more open and tolerant than it is.
At one point, one of your reporters was sort of seized with an investigative zeal about, of all things, sewage.
Yes.
And he seemed to move along on this track where the story was actually a very interesting story, and then everything came to an abrupt halt. What stopped it?
Well, we were told, I was told when I came into the kingdom, you can't write anything about the royal family or the government or Islam, which are, you know, all the most important subjects. And sewage, I thought, was stood aside from those other issues, and it was it's a critically important story in Jeddah, because the city is just overrun with spilling sewage, and there is a catastrophe in the making. The other newspapers weren't covering it, and I was a little mystified by that. I mean, we were very aggressive on it, and it turned out that that the governor, who was a member of the royal family, was behind a new plan to impose a toll on the sewage truck drivers in order to build a new sewage dam. And apparently all the other newspapers knew about that, and so they hadn't run any stories on it. And as soon as our paper became aware of the fact that he was involved, everything rolled to a halt, an abrupt halt.
What about a free press does the Saudi government and royal family find so worrisome?
Well, a free press would hold the royal family and the government accountable. And they are right now, they control the press, and they control their image. I can certainly understand why they would want to keep that kind of control. But the truth is, they're blinded to the dangers of their own society. For instance, they had no idea that Al-Qaeda was in the kingdom, and they had no idea how people felt about bin Laden until the bombings in May and November. They wouldn't have been so blind to their own society had they had a free press and a way to have the people express themselves.
Lawrence Wright is the author of The Kingdom of Silence, an article that appeared in the January 5th issue of The New Yorker. Mr. Wright, thanks for your time.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That interview by Day to Day's Karen Grigsby Bates.